Hey, what's up? This is Esrox, and you're listening to Just Press Start. This week, I decided to give Jeff the week off, the holidays and all, and what have you. And we're starting to get really busy with our best of, worst of show, and what have you. So we got that going. And Jeff has been reviewing his butt off, so I decided to give him a bit of a break. In doing that, though, I decided to try something new here this week. I'm joined by Ben Kane. Say hello.
Hello.
Ben Kane is well known for his two XBLIG games, Lair of the Evildoer and DLC Quest. So, wow, you almost think I did the voice for the trailer there.
That's pretty good.
So, he's got a couple of really great titles. I do know that he's working on Lair of the Evildoer for PC at some point in time. I had a chance to beta test that for a little while, which was a lot of fun. But yeah, so we decided to get Ben on the show here this week to do something new on Just Press Start. We do a lot of interviews, as everybody knows. We love our interviews. We love our regular show. But I thought, why don't we try doing something else? So Ben, you have the honor of being the first developer to come onto our show and do a post-mortem for one of your games.
All right. Guinea pigs always have, like, good life expectancy, don't they?
In this case, on this show, not only do they have good life expectancy, they end up coming back on the show several times. You know, not to point out anybody, Nathan Fouts, Mommy's Best Games, he's been on here quite a bit. And Chris Steele's been on here a couple of times. So, yeah, you're in good company. They haven't done postmortems, but you're in good company. So, to give the audience an idea of what a postmortem is, basically we pick a video game and we ask questions about the video game based just on that one game. More or less, we talk about the game itself, what went right, and what went wrong. And we kind of break things down a little bit. So, Ben, tell us a little bit about the company first.
So my company is called Going Loud Studios, and it's a one-man operation that I started up a little over a year ago. I used to work in the big industry, and then I decided to quit and go indie, and came up with Going Loud Studios, probably September of last year.
Nice.
Since then, we've put out three games, actually. We had an earlier game on XBLIG called Zombie Accountant, and then after that was Lair of the Evildoer and now DLC Quest.
All right, I'm sorry I missed Zombie Accountant.
I think a lot of people did.
I was going to say, you could flog me for that later. No, that just means I didn't do enough research. That's the problem. I'm going to hear about it from Jeff later. So I decided to focus on DLC Quest, not because, you know, you sent me a code to review it, and I reviewed it, and I absolutely loved it, but DLC Quest really caused a stir in a lot of the people that played it. So give us a little background about DLC Quest. You know, the basic synopsis of the game, where you kind of got the idea from, about how long it took you to come up with it, you know, stuff like that.
Sure. So DLC Quest, in a nutshell, is a game that pokes fun at the basic DLC practices that are going on throughout the industry. Things like exclusive pre-orders and adding game content that really probably should have been on the disc in the first place, or in some cases is on the disc in the first place. And it really takes that to the extreme and mocks the whole practice by forcing you to basically buy in-game DLC for fake money to unlock really key features of the game, like moving left and animation and sound and things like that. The whole idea came to me actually when I was working on Lair of the Evildoer. And it was around that time that Battlefield 3 was in beta, I think, or it was very close to coming out. And they announced an exclusive pre-order pack that had some very essential add-on for snipers. And the way they had phrased it, it was going to be like just the thing that you needed in order to succeed as a sniper in multiplayer.
Uh-huh.
And basically, all the fans of Battlefield were up in arms about this because they didn't want to have to buy DLC just to be able to play the class the way they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, well, hey, this would be a great thing to add to Lair of the Evildoer, maybe get a bit of buzz going in the press world, just like the little indie guy makes fun of the big bad company and comes up with some phony DLC for his new game. But I was running way too long on development for Evildoer, so I basically just wrote the idea down and left it aside for the time being.
Okay.
And then from that point on, I worked on Evildoer for another couple of months, and anytime something crazy happened as far as DLC was concerned, I just added to my list. And by the time I had finished Evildoer, there was more than enough to make a game out of.
Well, it's funny because you have that added stuff, but you also have stuff that was older DLC from other games, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I think once the idea of making a game entirely about DLC kind of solidified in my head, I went back and I thought, well, what's like the quintessential DLC that everybody hates? And that was Horse Armor from Oblivion. And maybe it's a little unfair on Bethesda's part, because they were really experimenting in this unknown market. But whenever you talk about DLC, Horse Armor comes up. So I knew I had to work that in. And I basically just tried to build the game around that one piece of DLC.
Which is actually hilarious, I might add, because you point out, this game has horse armor, you know, which is funny. So like all postmortems, you know, there's stuff that went right and there's stuff that went wrong. Let's talk about the stuff that went wrong first, because I'd rather end things on a positive note before we talk about some other stuff. So in your eyes, what went wrong with DLC Quest?
That's actually a pretty tough question to answer, largely because my investment in DLC Quest was so small, and basically the return on it has been so surprisingly huge that not much really went wrong with it. That's not to say it was totally flawless. There's one thing in the game where you can do 10,000 grinds of a grindstone to get your sword, or you can do the right thing and buy the DLC to skip that. And I never expected anyone to mash their controller 10,000 times, but I think I get mail or tweets from someone every day or every other day saying they've done that, and they were disappointed to find out there's no real reward for it. And it's purely because I just never expected anyone to do it. So I feel bad that I've wasted the collective time of so many gamers with this stupid task. I just didn't foresee anybody trying it.
All right, quick question here, really quick. Does it actually finish the sword after you pound on the controller 10,000 times?
Oh, it does. I'm so glad I actually tested that once before releasing it, because if people went through that and it didn't work, they'd be pretty pissed off.
Well, it was funny because I played DLC Quest. You gave us a chance to review it. I absolutely loved it, as you know. And when I got to that part, I actually started grinding the sword down, and I got about, I don't know, 5 minutes into doing it, and I just was like, yeah, I'm not doing this. And it was so funny because I didn't notice the bar went up anything. I must not have grinded it all that much. And I always had that question in the back of my head. I was like, did he finish that? Or does the game force you to buy the DLC saying that, oh, you can grind it for 10,000 times? I thought it would have been a hilarious joke if you had it sit there, you grind it 10,000 times, and the guy was like, hey, you did a great job, but you need to grind it 10,000 more times.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. I'll write that down for the sequel.
Nice. I'm sorry. So, really, you feel that that's the only bit that went wrong with the whole process? Like, were there any snags when you were designing it? Things like that?
That's probably my only regret about the way the game development worked. But really, my biggest misstep was probably just not anticipating how well it could be received. I really wasn't expecting that many people to really get the joke, or if they did get it, I didn't expect them to really buy into it and find it that funny. I was hoping for maybe 1 in 5 people to actually like the game. So to have it sort of blow up the way it did, at least as far as Xbox Indies goes, I just wasn't really prepared for it. I didn't have the right press materials ready at the time. I didn't have a PC version ready, so I haven't been able to capitalize on that yet. but hopefully that's coming.
Quick question: why didn't you think it was going to get the accolades that it has?
Well, part of the approach I took to developing this game was actually to not say anything about it until it was essentially finished. So I put in playtesting for maybe 2 or 3 days, and some people said it was funny, and they said the platforming was pretty solid, and that's about all I hoped for. But other than that, I didn't really let anybody else play the game. And after working on it for so long, I honestly could not tell if anything was funny anymore. It was just like hammering on the same jokes. I was tired of them. They didn't pop out at me at all. Uh-huh. Things people have come back to me and said, oh, this is like just hilarious. It's my favorite part of the game. I was like, really? I almost cut that because I was sick of it. But it just totally caught me off guard.
Nice. But really quick, how long did it take for you to put this game together?
From start to finish, it was just about 7 weeks.
Okay, so just under 2 months.
Yeah.
All right. And it's a little shocking. I was expecting like this long list of X and A didn't work, the game bugged here, oh my god, it was really stressful. It's kind of cool to hear that you actually were just... You basically, and I don't mean to kind of cheapen it a little bit, I'm trying not to, but it almost sounds like you kind of threw it together and put it out there as just like, yeah, let's see what happens.
Yeah, that was honestly part of my approach. I wanted to make a game in a short period of time and see if it would be in any way profitable. And a lot of that was spurred on by the fact that I spent a long time on Lair of the Evildoer, and it just wasn't worth the time investment. So the approach here was just spend way less time, have a really focused idea, and if it's short but to the point, then maybe it'll be well received.
Nice, nice. So what went right?
Definitely the short development time and hopefully some return on investment there. That was really my main goal, to see if I could come up with a way that I can make Xbox indie games and survive financially on it. It's kind of the style that the Radiant Games developer took, where he was putting out a game every month just to see that if he could keep that up, would it be enough to sustain him? And I figured 6-month-long dev cycles aren't panning out, so why not try 1-month-long? And eventually it was more like 2 months, but... It still worked out in the end.
Nice. Nice. Anything else you think that that went right with the whole development cycle and how the game came to be?
I think focusing on sort of a marketable hook was a good idea. I didn't talk about the game partly because I didn't want to spend a lot of time making development videos that really maybe a handful of other developers would watch and nobody else. Mm-hmm. But part of not talking about it was that I didn't really want to give away sort of the gimmick to the game. I figured if I did an early trailer, if that got any sort of attention, it probably wouldn't get featured on big sites a second time a few weeks later. Mm-hmm. So I just kept it in my pocket and hoped that the sort of built-in hook for the concept would be enough to get people's attention.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. And here I thought there was like a whole bunch more to it because, you know, I'm going to admit it is short, but it just seemed like so much went into it. And yet you're kind of putting it together like, yeah, I just threw it together, put it out there and had fun with it.
Well, I definitely had fun with it. I think a lot of the just throwing it together feeling comes from the fact that I had basically tracked these ideas for the final few months of making Lair of the Evildoer and then another couple of months while I worked on the PC version of that. And in that sense, I was sort of designing the game for a while. So maybe it's a bit of a stretch to say I made the game in 7 weeks, but from the time I actually started coding anything and working on it full time, that was 7 weeks. But you could say that the ideas were percolating for maybe another 3-4 months before that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I'd ask about how many, how much in sales you've done on Lair of the Evildoer, but from what I'm getting from the other XBLIG devs, the service hasn't updated on sales in like 3 weeks.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty unfortunate. I think we're missing the past 18 days of sales, or 18 of the past 20 days of sales.
Oh my goodness, that's too long.
Yeah, it's a pretty bad situation right now.
I don't know how you guys deal with it. I really don't. My hat goes off to all you XBLIG guys not knowing how you're doing. So, otherwise, other than that, how well was it received other than just on Just Press Start? What were other people saying about it?
So the trials on the dashboard were a bit more than I expected. It certainly got demoed a lot more than Lair of the Evildoer did. The conversion rate was insane. Like I said, I was hoping for 1 in 5, and it's closer to 3 in 5. As far as sort of critic reviews go, it's definitely a hit and miss there. There are some people that appreciate it, probably the same way that you did, and there have been a fair number of people who think it's an absolute waste of time and one of the worst indie games ever made. So it's pretty polarizing, I gotta say.
Well, I'll tell you this right now. Anybody that says it's one of the worst indie games made of all time, yeah, they have no soul.
They haven't played a lot of the games that are on the indie marketplace.
No, they haven't played any games that have a sense of humor at all, actually. I think that's the issue. They have no sense of humor, and they're playing games that have no sense of humor at all. They're probably the ones that play World of Warcraft for like 12 hours a day. It's all life, man. Don't delete my character. Gonna go to Dalaran. Anyway, sorry.
Wait, why do you know that?
I'm not gonna lie, I used to play, and then I found out why I shouldn't play those games, and I completely quit playing them. I'm not gonna lie.
All right, you're clean now.
I dabbled, I'm not gonna lie. No, my MMO of choice actually is EVE Online. I know, internet spreadsheets, get it out of your system, just say it.
No, I've tried Eve too. I definitely see the appeal there.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, who were you in Eve? Were you popular? Just curious.
I think I played Eve for whatever their free trial was, maybe 3 weeks long or something. I can't say I ever got the hang of it. I did like their universe, just a bit too much time investment for me.
Well, like most people say, it's you go, you work all day, you were at your job, you sit down, you boot up Eve Online, you're at your other job.
Yeah.
The only difference is that, well, EVE Online could be considered slavery, except that you agree to, play it.
And pay for it.
Exactly. No, I played the game. I love it, or I loved it, and I'm glad I'm not playing it anymore. My wife is glad I'm not playing it now. I think we were dating when I started playing it again, and yeah, she was like, "Yeah, you're not playing this when we get married." Okay. So she wins. So anyway, aside from all of that, let's look at Xbox Live. All right, they just did the update. I've been playing with the update for a lot longer than the update's been around. What are your thoughts on it?
Very mixed. I think, like most people, I'm not a big fan of the Metro interface as a whole. It looks good. It really does. But it's just kind of a pain to use. I don't know if it's better with a Kinect. I don't actually have one. But with a controller, it just seems a bit clunky. And there's really, in my opinion, too much focus on things that aren't games. I know that's where Microsoft's going. I know that's exactly what they want to do, but that's not really why I own an Xbox.
So you're not a big fan of the whole tile setup?
Not a huge fan. I think it can be used properly. There seems to be a lot of repetition and a lot of sort of counterintuitive ways to find things. The game's marketplace itself seems like kind of a mess right now. I know it'll get better as you get used to it, and for now it's just sort of something new and kind of resist change. But it feels like there's too many new releases lists on every page, and everything is kind of scattered, but not in an organized fashion. Like, it feels like it would just be easier if they said, here where the arcade games live, and then you can click on their tiles to see their advertised games or organize it by genre or something, rather than lump everything together for the most part on some pages and then have it divided on others. It's just not as intuitive as I had hoped.
And are XBLIG games a little more visible on that, or are they still buried?
They're nowhere near as buried as they were when they were in that specialty shop section. Right now, they have a fairly prominent tile in this rotating ad carousel, and it's weird that you have to come up with all these different terms to just describe the marketplace now. But they do have a fairly large and prominent tile that links to a nice indie section, you could call it, with Kotaku's favorites and the new releases list. And I think that's good, other than the strange part where you have to wait for the carousel to rotate until you can actually see that it says indie games.
I think you could force it to rotate with the
you can use the right stick.
Yeah,
if you have that tile highlighted. But it seems like there's all these unnecessary barriers to actually seeing things on the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
As long as that large tile sticks around and stays in the place it is, I'm pretty happy with the visibility of the indie section.
Mm-hmm.
If that tile ever goes away, then the other indie section is hidden away under game types, I believe, which I really don't have much faith that people are going to go digging in there looking for indie games.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, basically, as long as that top level tile stays around, I'm pretty happy with where you can find indie games. Not necessarily with how you can browse through them, though. There are some problems there.
Uh-huh. Here's a quick question, too, and I know you might not want to do this, but what's the general consensus within the other indie game developers? Because I know you have access to the AppHub forums and whatnot. Are they, like, up in arms like they have with past updates, or are they a little more chilled with this one?
I don't think the response is quite as, like, overwhelmingly negative as it was before. There are definitely some people that think it's not that bad. Part of that is that there are some other big additions to the dashboard that really will benefit indie games. Like, there's related games now that you can go to find indie games from other indie games. It's a lot easier to rate indie games from your library. So people are kind of thinking that Microsoft has tossed us a bone in that respect. So they're not really ticked off about everything, but they are pretty annoyed about the way that the lists are displayed as just one giant list of 2,000 titles, and really the fact that you can't sort things by genre anymore, which is pretty ridiculous.
Wow, that sounds it. You just said that there's 2,000 indie game titles. That's mind-boggling within itself.
Yeah, close to 2,200 now.
Now I hate to say it, but let me guess, there's like 200, you know, back massagers too, aren't there?
I think someone counted the massagers, and yes, it's an absurd number, like 25 or 30, but it's not that bad. But yeah, it's pretty bad.
Wow. So what's next for you and your game studio?
The top priority right now is to get DLC Quest onto PC. It's definitely one of the things that people have asked me for ever since it came out. So who am I to argue? If they want to give me money for my game, I will happily sell it to them. I just have to find a way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my main priority. I'm also tinkering with some other smaller projects on the side. Obviously really happy with the success of DLC Quest, but I want to keep going with the short development cycle, release more games more frequently, even if they have to have a smaller scope. It's a lot of fun to work on new stuff, so I want to keep doing that as much as possible.
Cool. Anything else you'd like to say to all the loyal fans?
Oh, I should have come up with something genius to say to sign off. watch out for DLC Quest on PC. It's coming sooner than you think.
Cool. Well, we've been sitting here chatting with Ben Kane and of Going Loud Studios. Wow, I don't know why I keep blanking on that. I blame the intoxicating aroma of my wife's dinner that's now emanating out of the kitchen. But Ben, thank you very much for coming on the show. We really look forward to your next release. We, you know, wish you all the best with DLC Quest. I'm sure when it hits PC, it's gonna go crazy. It's gonna blow up.
Thanks for having me on.
So, and I really hope to see DLC Quest in Steam. Man, I'm messing up.
But, I've got my fingers crossed on that one, too.
And by the way, for all the fans that do listen to the show, you can catch Ben from time to time on the JustPressStart.net Battlefield 3 server. He was on there. And I'll warn all of you, he's really good.
Yeah, he's a camper, but he'll get you.
Oh, you're not a camper, stop. You're just sneaky. You don't even play a sneaky class, and you play sneaky, which is awesome. So, yeah, thanks, Ben, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.